It is time for the Border News Roundup. Friday mornings, we get a chance to check in with Marshall Helmberger, the editor and publisher of The Timber Jay, a newspaper serving northeastern Minnesota. Marshall, thanks for being with us again.
Well, happy to be here, Heidi.
Well, let's start off with a story. You had this opportunity this week as a celebration of the 40th anniversary of the Boundary Waters Canoe Area Act.
Yeah, it's the Boundary Waters Wilderness Act, basically. And this, of course, was legislation passed in 1978. And there was a 40th anniversary celebration of it down in Minneapolis this week. And I wasn't there, but I did get the chance to talk to three people who did attend. And so I was able to get them all together. And that included Tom Vilsack, who was the Secretary of Agriculture under President Obama, as well as Tom Tidwell, who was the Forest Service Chief during that time, and then also Brenda Halter, who was the Superior National Forest Supervisor during that same period. And the interesting thing about it, of course, is all three of them were very much involved in the decision by the Forest Service to deny renewal of those twin metals leases. Those are those two copper-nickel mineral leases that actually date back to the 1960s, but they had been renewed a couple of times, and Twin Metals had wanted to renew them again, and the Forest Service had said no for a number of different reasons. And then at the same time, they had had a two-year moratorium on any additional mineral leasing while they did a study of the withdrawal of a proposal to withdraw 234,000 acres of the Superior National Forest from the mineral leasing program. And essentially that would have said it would have been a prohibition on any mineral leasing on federal lands within a big chunk of the Superior National Forest within that Rainy Lake watershed. And those would be areas that drain into the boundary water. So essentially it would have been expanding the existing buffer zone that exists around portions of the boundary waters. It was a very interesting conversation. Some of the concerns that were raised, of course, was, you know, that the work that they had done, which they believed they had really set the stage and had well documented their decision, and then I think they were very frustrated to see when the Trump administration came in that their decisions were simply set aside without much justification. They were most disappointed. I think Tom Vilsack in particular was very disappointed in the fact that they did not continue or ever complete the two-year study on the mineral withdrawal. They saw that, in fact, all three of them said they saw that study as a really valuable opportunity for the Forest Service and I think the communities up here as well to kind of assess the pros and cons of mineral leasing within and mining ultimately within that area. And Tom Vilsack indicated that from the evidence he's seen, including a recent study by two Harvard economists, he believes that the economy of the area, actually of the Ely area in particular, would benefit from a continuation of the existing economic model there, which is sort of based on quality of life, attracting people to the area, who come from all over. And, there have been many, many new residents in the area who are attracted to kind of that Northwoods or wilderness lifestyle in the area. And, they bring with them all kinds of their incomes. And that's kind of a basis for a more sustainable economy in the long run, according to Vilsack. And he's very concerned that the opportunity to kind of assess the economics of the two different models was lost in the administration's decision to jettison that study.
That's got to be tough for them. A lot of work put in.
I think it is, yeah. I mean, because I think they felt good about it. And Brenda Halter, of course, she was very much involved with this too. And she said, you know, there's some who believe that, you know, you can have both, that you can have a mine and you can also protect the boundary waters. But, you know, she said she doesn't think that's true. And you actually look at the track record of sulfide-based mining and the acid runoff that it often causes. She said it's well known that it's a high-risk activity And when you're doing it in a place that is so water-rich as that portion of the Superior National Forest, where you have so many lakes and rivers, and where the what you're putting at risk is some of the most pristine water in the whole country. And so when you balance all that out, she said, it's a poor bet to do copper nickel mining there. And Tom Tidwell too. You know, he spent most of his 41 years with the Forest Service working in the western United States, particularly in places like Nevada and Montana. And he had a lot of experience with sulfide-based mining. And, he was very familiar with the historic legacy of pollution that has been seen at these mines all across the West. And he said that this type of mining is very poorly suited for, the environment and the boundary waters, which with all the water. So, I think they felt that, number one, that their decision was disregarded, which they believed was based on science, and that the opportunity to learn even more about the trade-offs here was lost by the administration's decision.
Well, let's move on to another story. Congressional District 8 continues to be in the news. Last week we heard from you about the Department of Administration there. They thought that Pete Stauber's emails should be released, but the St. Louis County is not releasing them yet. What's new on this story?
Well, as expected, the county was hit with a lawsuit over that issue. We had talked about the possibility that the Star Tribune, which had originally requested these emails and then had requested the advisory opinion from the Department of Administration, we had assumed that they would be the most likely litigant here, and they may still sue. We don't know. But the DFL party jumped right into it immediately, and they announced that they filed suit against St. Louis County to get access to these emails. And, this issue, when it first came out, it didn't really seem like it would really, get much traction. But it certainly has increased. I think that decision by the Department of Administration is, in particular, kind of raised the stakes here. Because now St. Louis County is, going against a state agency's ruling. And then now when you're dealing with lawsuits, of course, now the county's going to have to defend itself. That's going to cost money. And so here now the county is expending more resources over, Pete Stauber's emails. And Stauber, of course, is perfectly free to release these emails at any point. And would save the county, obviously, the hassle and the sort of tarnishing of their reputation by withholding these emails. And then, obviously, the expense of litigation is another issue. And Stauber could obviously, end all that by simply saying, yeah, fine, release the emails. And then at least two St. Louis County commissioners have called on him to do that. And then this week, actually, a number of our Iron Range legislators, including Jason Metza from the Virginia area and Rob Eklund from District 3A, which covers, almost all the Arrowhead, have sent a letter to to St. Louis County urging them to release those emails. It does raise the question, certainly, why Stauber is so reluctant to release these emails. And there is the possibility, that we don't have evidence yet because we haven't seen the emails. But, one of the issues that could be at play is whether or not, if Stauber was communicating with the National Republican Congressional Committee, which is a political action committee, and if they were, discussing things like, political messaging and advertising, things like that, there could be a problem there because, federal law does prohibit candidates or their campaigns from coordinating activities with political action committees who are making independent expenditures. There could be some other legal issues there at play, but of course we wouldn't know that until we'd get a chance to actually see these emails and see exactly what they were communicating. But there are a number of these emails, so it wasn't just a one short out and back kind of a thing. I mean, there was a sustained conversation apparently, and I think certainly at this point, I think the public probably deserves to know what was being said there. We did editorialize this week, actually, that Stauber should just, on his own, just agree to release the emails to kind of put an end to this controversy. Because it can't be a good thing for his campaign, you know, obviously having something like this out there. I think as Hillary Clinton certainly learned, email controversies and withholding emails can be politically problematic. And I can imagine this is something that the Stauber campaign would like to have behind them, but I don't think that's going to happen until they are able to get these things released.
It's the Border News Roundup. It's our High Five membership drive. We're asking for you to support conversations like what you're listening to right now. All you have to do is give us a call at 800-662-5799. Be a first-time giver. Consider giving us $5 a month for the year ahead. Marshall, big news in the world of competitive eating. Joey Chestnut is coming back. Tell us what's going on.
Yes, it's going to be a rematch of the Mega Eaters here. We've got Joey Chestnut will be coming back for another try at beating Jeffrey Esper, who last year beat him in the first annual Indian Taco Eating Contest, and this was held at Fortune Bay. And this was last fall, and they will be back on November 3rd for another go-round. And it promises to be probably nausea-inducing just watching these poor guys. I mean, you get a sense of how much these guys really suffer as they're trying to, stuff as many of these things down their gullet as they can. Last year, Esper beat Chestnut 29 Indian tacos to 28.
Oh.
So Chestnut was just absolutely devastated by this loss. So he is certainly going to be back looking for revenge. And I'm sure you're going to want a front row seat, or maybe not, just depending on how far these guys might hurl at some point. So wow. You don't want to get caught in the splash.
Wow.
But anyway, yeah, no, it's definitely entertaining. And when you get there, the announcer makes it sound like this is literally the most important thing in the world.
He's probably been training all year. He's doing other competitive eating, and so...
Oh, absolutely. No, these guys, they take it seriously.
Wow. All right. That's coming up November 3rd at Fortune Bay. Before we go, how's the grouse season going?
Well, you know, it's picking up. We've been hearing better reports, and I have to say from my own experience, I am seeing a lot more birds. It's amazing what happens with the grouse when the leaves come down. I mean, they just sort of come out of the woodwork, literally. And so folks have been reporting that they're seeing a lot better numbers than I think what they had anticipated. You know, last year, of course, we had that year when the DNR was predicting this great season, and it turned out to be kind of a bust. And so everybody was a little more cautious about this year, thinking, well, it may not be very good. But now suddenly the birds are showing up and the hunters are happy. So I guess if folks want to get out for another go at them here before deer season, this would be the weekend.
That's right. It's Marshall Helmberger, the Border News Roundup. He and Jody are members of KEXE, KBXE, and I'm sure you want other people to support this station. We have a great partnership with you on Friday mornings, and we sure appreciate it, Marshall. Thanks for supporting us all these years.
Oh, you bet. We appreciate the work you guys do.
All right.
Love KEXE.
We'll talk to you next week. Thanks.
All right. Sounds great.